take here. Everyone that's in the audience, take a sip as we all go into a woosah moment, as we can come together, as all of the different simulcast stations give us the countdown. And welcome everyone at the Mega Gent. And hold on a second. And welcome everyone to the Mega Giant BBS Radio. We're going to be simulcasting here with AIB Radio Network also. So everyone stand by for a second as we introduce Rebecca Cope, Rod Class, and Harvey. You are here too. Welcome everyone.
All right. Yes, yes. I'm looking forward to this because Rod's got some important updates on that DC case coming up for hearing pretty soon. It should have just been dismissed a year ago. I'm really looking forward to this update with Rod. Hello, Rod. How are you tonight?
Oh, good, good. We're hanging in there.
Okay.
Everyone's going to have to mute their mic when they're not talking.
All right, Matt.
Yeah. Everyone's going to have to mute their mic. That's interesting. Everyone's mic. Rod, can you put your headset on? There we go. Alrighty. And go ahead and unmute and see how does that work now.
Now we didn't have this last time.
Yeah, we didn't have this last time. Is it hearing aid maybe?
Is Harvey in the same area as you, Rod?
No.
No, Harvey's up in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Let me.
Do you have several computers connected?
Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can. All right. Is that better?
Oh yeah, you fixed it. Fantastic.
All right, Harvey, are you on? You on the headset?
Hold on.
Harvey, are you on the headset or got a mic? Because what was doing was feeding back through the telephone because I got you on TalkShoe. It was feeding back.
No, I have my phone turned down. Can you hear me?
Okay, now we don't have the feedback. The people on TalkShoe can still hear us. I just muted out your phone because we're getting feedback through the TalkShoe show.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes,
we're all good here. Now that we're all here and we're all properly mic'd and muted here, so welcome, Rod. Let's talk about the DC case that's coming up. Welcome, Harvey, also, and everyone else that's sticking around for this incredible conversation that we got going.
And let's say hello to Harvey because this is the first time that he's joined us on air. And this guy is just an incredible asset. You know, he just gets on there and starts Rod shows each time. This guy has been a DJ forever. He got to interview G. Edward Griffith several years ago, and he's just a real cool dude. So I'm just so glad to have Harvey join us, and I just want to acknowledge that before we get started tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Anyway.
All right.
Well, what has happened here in D.C. is back on May 30th, 2013, I went up to Washington, D.C. to file a second set of documents for Private Attorney General and Bounty Hunter. And those of you that have seen that preview of the show, see me coming in my Jeep out to campground with the stickers on it, the Private Attorney General Bounty Hunter. And that's what I had in D.C. with me, along with my vest that I had on as Private Attorney General and Bounty Hunter going into D.C. I didn't have a problem going into the House. I didn't have a problem going into the Senate. But coming back out, is where I got stopped by the DC police down there on my Jeep. And the issue came up with them, did I have any firearms? I said, no, I did not have any firearms. They said, well, if we find any, we're going to get you for perjury. I said, no. I said, if you're going to ask me, did I have a pistol and a rifle, I will tell you yes. I have a carry permit from North Carolina. But I'm also a constitutional bounty hunter and a private attorney general. And I just got new paperwork stamped from the Senate and the House to validate my position. Well, they didn't want to go into any of this. They were trying to sidestep all this. I ended up getting handcuffed shortly after they asked me who I was. I got thrown in the back of the cruiser. I got interrogated for 3 hours and 40 minutes according to their time schedule of what they had and what they gave me for evidence. During this 3 hours and 40 minutes, I was giving them a short lecture on what the laws actually are, like we're doing here on AIB Radio. We're walking people through the legislative law. We're telling them what the law is, where it's at. So this ended up being a mini seminar with these people. The FBI that I talked to up there, they come up and says, well, you're one of them sovereign citizens. So we brought up about North Carolina Constitution under Article 1, Section 2, that says sovereignty lies with the people. And that the government is derived from the people. Therefore, the people control the government. I said, but I can also get in and I can show you where legislation or through Supreme Court decisions, Supreme Court says that you people are sovereign. Now, which one of us is the terrorist? The one that is upholding the laws or the one who's violating the laws? Well, that pretty much ended the conversation. Then we got into the tax side of this thing, that you don't believe in paying taxes. I said, wait a minute. First off, I'm not being paid any money. We're getting Federal Reserve notes. And as we were sitting here talking about this, I asked him, does any of you have a Federal Reserve note? And they looked at me. And the more I asked them, the more they just looked. I said, okay, obviously you guys are being paid in gold and in silver. And they laughed. I said, I mean, you guys don't have gold and silver? I said, well, no. I said, then somebody has to have a green and white piece of paper got a 1, 5, 10, or 20 on it. Well, they pulled out a $5 bill. So I proceeded to explain the $5 bill to them, that Federal Reserve note. And I had the FBI. I said, tell me what this says across the top. He says, Federal Reserve note. I said, good. So I started to explain the McFadden file from 1933 and 1932 and got explained with what Lindbergh was talking about. It's not money. It's a mere promise to pay. What is in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, Section 16? It is an obligation of the United States. Well, once we start getting into this, then he sort of cut the conversation short because I started laying out facts and figures to these people. Well, we got into the birth certificate side. I started explaining about the birth certificate. I got explained about the signature. I've went through about 3 different groups at that time. And finally, after it was all said and done with, they came up and the DC police officer, well, Mr. Klass, we're going to read you your rights. We're going to place you under arrest. So that's when they read me my Miranda. I said, do you understand this? I says, yeah. So here, sign this. So I signed a sheet of paper. Then I turned around, I looked at them. I said, now, does this mean that everything that you have taken out of my vehicle and all these questions that we have asked me for the last umpteen hours, does this mean that you cannot use any of this because you have now Mirandized me? And the FBI and the U.S. Marshal said, oh, shit. I said, yeah, you didn't think I didn't know this. You didn't think I didn't understand this. Well, I ended up getting hauled off, and they got put in jail for the weekend. Well, I had a public defender that popped in, and him and I had a conversation. His name was Donald Dworsky. And him and I had a conversation. He says, Mr. Klass, I'm in here to get you out. You know, I didn't hear any of the other attorneys sit there and tell their clients that. He says, I'm in here to get you out. Well, when we got down to the court, and I got up before Judge Sullivan, while I was out there in line in the chain gang with handcuffs and shackles, I talked to the U.S. Marshals out there, and I said, is this a federal court? And they said, yes, it is. I said, are you sure? He said, yes. I said, so federal laws and federal rules apply in this court. He said, yes, it does. This is good. This is what I need to know. Well, then we got talking about my side of the PAG and constitutional bounty hunter on this. I said, what authority do you actually have? I said, my authority is higher than yours. I said, because I started to explain to them that the Judiciary Act of 1789 created the court. It created the building. It didn't give position. It just created a building. The same thing, it created the Attorney General's office. It didn't fill it. It just created the vacancy. Well, that's the same thing with the U.S. Marshals. It created the agency. It didn't fill it. On the other hand, the private attorney general in 1866, when it was created, gave us, the people, us, gave us the ability to act as private attorney general on behalf of the United States and bring charges and claims against the administration. We can't use it against each other, but we can use it when we're facing one of them on the other side. So we can go head-to-head with them on this. So they got an education on this, but when we went up before Judge Sullivan, and the prosecutor made the comment to the police officer, and police said, yeah, Mr. Class had this, and he had the gun, and he had a rifle, and he had knives and all this other shit in his Jeep. And Dworsky looked at the judge and says, Your Honor, I want to tell you, this is Mr. Class here. He is a private attorney general and a bounty hunter. He has congressional legislation. At that point in time, Judge Sullivan said, we're going to bar you from being in D.C. I want you to get your stuff and get out of D.C. Well, that to me, I was supposed to get my stuff. That means my Jeep and everything I own. My charges were dropped because I was told to get my stuff and get out. Well, when I went down to the police department to get it, I got released out of jail, and I was... They took my shoestrings, they took my belt, and everything was sort of floppy. So I was holding my pants up and trying to walk in shoes without no shoestrings. I ended up taking my shoes off. Well, there was a black Suburban and a black car back there in the back. So I walked over to the Suburban. I knocked on the window, and it was the police officer that arrested me. They was crawling down underneath the seat trying to get down behind the steering wheel so I couldn't see him. Well, I knocked on the window anyhow. I asked him, I said, if you're going to follow me, take me to the police department. Well, we can't do this. He said, yes, you can. If you can bring me down here, you can take me back. Now, let's play taxi both ways here. They had no sense of humor on this. But anyhow, I ended up walking. And I ended up taking the transit. I got off the next stop. I found another police officer. They had police officers on every corner up there. So I walked over to one and says, hey, I said, I need some help. I said, I need to find your police department. It's at 119 D Street. And I showed him the little piece of paper I had that had for property. He says, you're the one. I said, I'm the one what? He says, you're the one that we was told about. I said, well, what was you said? He said, we was told that you're barred from D.C. He said, you've got these people scared absolutely a death of you. They are afraid of you. So we don't know what the hell you did. I said, well, I'll tell you what I did. He said, what did you do? I said, I went down to your law library of Congress. I learned how to read your books. I said, that's what's got your side upset. I can read. I'm educated. I said, you guys need to read your own books. He said, we don't know what you did. He said, but you're the second person that's ever been barred from D.C. And you have these people terrified up here. Well, the thing of it is, they told me how to get down. And I got down and went down to the police department. Picked up what I had, and I was told to get out of town, walk out of town. And one police officer said, no, you're not doing this to this man. He just got out of jail. He hasn't had anything to eat. Make your phone call. Get somebody to come pick you up. Go relax. Go take it easy. So this police officer was being kind, understood what was going on. So I went over and got me something to eat at the restaurant. Well, lo and behold, these two police officers that was in the black Suburban were standing around outside, and the one come in, I waved at her. Sort of embarrassed her because she figured I wouldn't know who she was. So I just said, hi, how you doing? Just give a good old wave to her. And she walked back out. Well, I walked up behind Manning. I tapped her on the shoulder and says, hi. I said, you still looking for me? She said, well, we're just surveilling you. Make sure everything's doing good. That's all right. So I went back over to the police department. We got over to the police department. My buddy come up. I asked him, I said, do you know how to get out of this town? He says, well, I said, if you don't, say so. So I jumped out, went back, knocked on a Suburban, and asked them to give us an escort to get out of town. So they escorted us out of town, and they waved and beeped, and we just went on. Well, when it come time for me to come back and get my Jeep and get my computer, I had to notify them ahead of time that I was coming in. We had a 5-car escort. They met us at the Marriott down there, like on exit 77. We got there, and Bob got patted down. I got searched and patted down. The vehicle got searched with everything, and they escorted us in into a tight formation into the DC where they had my Jeep. Somebody tried to get in between us, and they flagged them off. They had to hit the lights on them, get them flagged off. Well, once we got down to the yard where they had an impound yard, I got all my stuff. Well, then I had a couple cars ahead of me. I had one behind me, two behind me, and Bob was in between, had one behind him to escort us out of D.C. So these people are definitely paranoid with what we're doing and what we're exposing. Problem of it is, I'm in federal court now. I went from the Superior Court to the federal court. And we're running into an issue. I have now went through 3 federal judges. I went through 3 prosecutors and 3 public defenders. My paperwork is being denied. But what we're doing on the federal level is that we're walking in and showing their violation of their own rules and their own regulations. And this is where Harvey's coming in at. I'm writing all this stuff up. I'm having a problem with some of the grammar and punctuations and trying to get some stuff across, and Harvey is coming in assisting me on helping me tighten up my paperwork in order to slam these people, and we're slamming them hard on what we're doing because we're really getting down into details on this. What we have exposed was the corporation side. We proved that they're not a government. Through the paperwork, we proved that they're operating under the International Organization Immunities Act as a UN and setup. We're coming in and showing that they're operating under the Trading with the Enemy Act. We're brought in as enemies of the state. We're showing that they brought us in under the state of emergency. We're laying out the entire history of the United States, what they've done from 1867, from the Reconstruction Act to the 14th Amendment, to the fact that D.C. became a corporation, to the fact they went under the International Organization Immunity side where they are a foreign corporation. We're showing the banking system taking over our government. We're laying all this out before the federal court, and the federal court is denying. And this is what we're running into because, like I talked about on a show here tonight, on this paperwork up here at the top is where the judge is writing his denial. He is not giving me an order. He's writing it on my paperwork. Now, I want you to look at the date of 8/1/2014. That's very significant because when we go down here and we show when it was received by the mailroom, it was on June 9th. He marked it on 8/1/14, and the court did not receive it until later date on this thing, which was the 5th. So this didn't even go to the clerk of court. It bypassed the clerk of court, went straight to the judge to make a decision. Then he had it filed into the clerk of court as a denial. This turns around and violates Title 18 under 2071 and 2076 of tampering with federal documents. So now we got him caught in tampering with federal documents on this. But we've got him in violation of their own rules because when I was up before Judge Kessler, And I finally get rid of AJ. I sit down and tell him, look, I want to remove him. He's not doing his job. And Kessler sit down and said, well, Mr. Kloss, you realize you have to understand the rules and the regulations. And she was going through the rules of evidence and the criminal rules of procedure. And she was laying all this stuff out. Well, the next time we went before her, I started to explain the rule books to her. I had the little cheat set that came from Congress, and I had the annotated set, which is written by the publishing side of this thing. When I started to explain the rules of evidence on how the Constitution is automatically admissible as evidence, and it can't be overrode, the federal statutes are already admissible, and they can't override these. The rules are already admissible, and they can't override these. And Supreme Court decisions are already admissible, and they can't override these. Well, these are the very things. Well, we already know this, so we can override all this stuff. You can't override squat. They are the foundational argument in these courts. And this is what they're overriding in these courtrooms on us. This is what the lawyers are allowing. This is what we're coming back in and exposing. The amount of corruption, the amount of treasonous acts that they're doing. This goes from the state court all the way up to the federal side. And this is where with Harvey, with what Harvey and I have been doing here, is I'm writing this stuff up. He's coming in and tightening it up for me. And we are just slamming these people, and they don't know how to handle the paperwork. They can't answer it. They come back in. Well, we don't oppose. We have no standing, you know. No, you got to come back in on facts and conclusions and laws, and you have to tell me what's wrong with my paperwork. Not that you don't have a position in this. Well, if the government doesn't have a position, then they don't have a claim. If you don't have position, then you don't have a charge. This is what we're hammering into D.C., and this is what's coming up here. Now, while we was out at this camp meeting, a case came in of Palmer, Thomas G. Palmer, won his civil rights case. He was part of the Heller case and Parker case. He was part of the D.C. case back in, 2008, someplace in that area, whenever this came about. The Supreme Court came in and ruled on the Heller case that the D.C. gun laws were unconstitutional at that time period. Well, they were unconstitutional at that time. And Palmer's been fighting them for 5 years. And finally here when we was at camp, he got a ruling that they was unconstitutional. Then that throws out my gun case. That throws out all gun cases in D.C. What has come about is that the Attorney General for the District of Columbia, as they are the ones that's being sued, is asking for a stay for 90 days. That stay for that 90 days wants to give D.C. the ability to re-amend their state codes. Well, you can't amend a code after the fact. Because if you already charged somebody, you can't come back and say, okay, we're going to amend this, and we want it retroactive back for the last 90 days, 5 years, 8 years. So we can't be sued. Well, if that's the case, then that means everybody who went to jail on that law now has to be turned loose. So they can't ex post facto it back, and that's what they're trying to do. This is the last document that Harvey and I did here, is that we address the Heller case, we address the Parker case on this, the McDonald case versus Chicago, which was another one of based on D.C. case with Heller, this Thomas G. Palmer case. We are addressing it, coming back in and showing that if the laws were unconstitutional, then all my gun charges have to be dropped, because when they come back in, say the District of Columbia, the District of Columbia is where the government property is sitting on. So that covers even the government property in D.C. They can't sit and say, they can't come back in and say, oh, well, this little block here, this is government. No. The whole damn thing's D.C. Go ahead, Becky.
Well, what I found remarkable is that you brought all of this in within almost that first bit of paperwork that you filed into that case, and they just had ignored the fact that you brought the Palmer case and the Heller case. You brought all of that out right to start with. And then to have this while we were at that conference with you and to see that this had been upheld again, it's like you have a lot of that information. You don't miss anything. I guess that's what I'm really saying. You had brought a lot of that out right to start with. So that's in your paperwork and in your favor because you've had that as a central key issue throughout this whole case.
Well, that's the whole thing. We're bringing all this stuff in. You know, we brought in the gun laws in this thing. We brought in the National Firearm Act of 1934. We brought in the 1968 Gun Control Law. We brought in the Firearm Protection, the Firearm Owners Protection of 1998. And see, what we did here is that we brought in the legal definition of the word firearm that came out of these legislative laws. And see, they're trying to go back in under Title 18, 921, that dealt with the gun control law. But if you go down and read footnotes, and this is what really upset the public defender's office with me, is that we pulled all their law books out. We started laying out the Title 26, which is the IRS code under 5845. We laid out Title 27 CFR, which is ATF under 479.11. We pulled out Title 18, 921, and we walked him through that. And I said, do you see down here where it says annotated, where it sits here and says modification of laws, and it refers you back to the 1934 firearms section A? Which means this has to be a sawed-off shotgun of less than 18 inches, overall length less than 26, a sawed-off rifle of 16 inches, overall length less than 26, a fully automatic machine gun, and a silencer. Well, we don't go by that. Yes, you do. It's in your damn book. See, this is the argument that we're running into. This is what we've been exposing. Now this Palmer case come out on this thing. Now it lays out again that the fact that their laws were unconstitutional, they were unfounded. So now we have laid this all out, but what we did is we not only nailed them on the gun side of this thing, but we brought in the 1902 Dick Act under House Resolution 1165-4, which goes in and declares all gun laws to be unconstitutional. We brought in the National Firearms Act and the Gun Control Act on this. We turned around and brought in their legal definitions. We even brought in what a person is, and under a person, under the National Firearms Act and these other acts, a person is that corporation. It is the importer. It's the exporter. It is the dealer. It's the wholesaler. It's the pawnbroker. It runs right down everything on the commercial side. And this is what we was laying out here for the first 2 hours on TalkShoe on AIB Radio, is that when you go in and you read the statutes at large, the statutes at large deals with commercial or administration. It has nothing to do with the private individuals. And Harvey brought up, and we got talking about this, is in the old statutes at large, there were sections that dealt with private bills. Private bills dealt with private individuals. And this is what we're getting across to the audience on TalkShoe, is that when they do a private bill and it is a specific name, it deals with that precise person, that specific person. It isn't for the public. But when they make public laws, it goes into the administration side. It goes into the corporation side. It goes into the commerce side of this thing. It has nothing to do with us. If you take the time to go back and read this and really look at it, because, Becky, you've read the Trading with the Enemy Act. Where did it have your name and my name in the Trading with the Enemy Act? It dealt with dealing with business. It dealt with association. It dealt with the companies. It didn't deal with the individual people.
Right, but we are the ones who have to do the licensing and the registration as if we are enemy, and then they pull all these licensing and registration schemes on us to get us to what? Act as if we are the enemy who has to have their permission to do everything now? That's exactly how it's being held over us all.
But see, in that original training with the Enemy Act, it did not deal with us. It did not deal with us. It didn't come out that way until the Mandatory Act of 1933, which is that Public Law 148 Stat C1, the banking law. That's when they changed it and put it into the people of the United States had to be licensed, because when they did the bankruptcy of this country, we had to hand over all of our property to the system so they could securitize, use it as a means of being able for revenue on their side. And this is what we were saying on the show, and it's what we brought out there at the house, is that mortgage note that we signed, that mortgage note was not supposed to have been given to us. That mortgage note was supposed to have been turned over to the United States so they could sit back and say, okay, he pulled this much money out of his account. This is what this property was worth. So this gets deducted out of his account. This is what we can borrow and securitize off his property for our war effort. And this is the interest that we're going to have to pay back to this man over these many years when it comes time. When we sit down and we stop the war, this is what we have to pay back to the people. This isn't how we were told. We were deceived that we had to take on that mortgage, and we were paying it back with Federal Reserve notes, which was not money, which we were deceived on this side of the thing. And this is where, when Dwight was getting into the SF-95 stuff, that how the corporation has to have the government side, the constitutional side, in order to embezzle out of the federal government and get into our account. And this is what we've been hammering in this DC case. We've been opening up a lot of this. This is what really has got these people really upset, because we're walking in here with all this knowledge. And this is one of the reasons why we have the federal agents show up down here, is because they were interested where we was getting our information. How could we back it? In one way, I think that she was sent down on a ruse to sit down to show this thing up as a fraud, and maybe in one aspect, maybe I'm wrong, but when she walked away, she walked out with the historical documents of the black ink on white paper that we actually showed her where all this stuff was at, how it was coming out of the system. So she's now sitting on the knowledge, and one of the things that she made a statement to everybody down there is the way we're teaching on AIB Radio, and the way we were teaching down here at the seminar, is that we're right on point of what we're teaching.
She kept talking about the fact that you laid out the foundational documents, source documents. And I think that's the thing that we're being able to do for people that has never been done before. What we're doing is not only proving that the corporations posing as governments took over the United States government, what you have been able to do, just quite simply, as we've really understood the War Powers Act, and we've been conscripted to take over to fund the war effort, and how our property has been conscripted, and then the license and registration was supposed to keep up with how they were supposed to pay us back over time. We're exposing that part of it, and then you're able to put the price tag. When the agent was there in front of the group, we had the Social Security Act of 1935, Section 501 and 502 right there on the screen, where it shows in black and white that $1.8 million per live birth comes into the, you know, that's the amount of funds that is given over to the war effort, shall we say, and then $1 million per year thereafter. And it's just as plain as day for anybody who reads that and pays attention to it, so that somebody who is 60 years old has put over $61.8 million into the coffers to take care of the war effort and has not been able to receive jot or title of that interest and use for themselves. And so we're beginning to write down so that we understand that we are the value, that our energy and our property, including our children, has been conscripted by this international parent corporation that we now know is the Bank of International Settlements, but that all of our energy has been tied up in those slavery contracts. And we're able to prove this now. So that it's like, yeah, this is really dangerous information in the hands of the people, because they never expected us to get it down to where we could understand it to the degree that we do. And the agent was able to see that we fully not only understand it, we have the documentation to prove it.
And this is what really shocked her more than anything, is the fact that we were able to walk and talk. I mean, I'll let Dwight explain to you some of the stuff that he was explaining to her on the corporation side of this. Hold on a minute.
Hello. Okay.
Yeah, this is Dwight. How
are
you doing over there?
Hey, Dwight. Come on in and give
us a Hey, Dwight. Come on in. Come on in.
Hey.
Nice to have you with us.
Coffee break.
There we go.
All right. So you're going to tell us what you were sharing with the agent as far as the corporation, because you have such a handle on it, because you watched what went down in Ohio and could really translate that into the larger picture. So share it with us.
Well, what we did, we had a lot of issues in Ohio. And we had to go back and do some research. Went back into the Dwight D. Eisenhower Historical Society. And there had been a rumor floating around for a while that Ohio wasn't a state. So I got online. I sent them an email. And for $20, they sent me 15 pages of stuff. It shows in 1953, Ohio actually rescinded the 14th Amendment. In 1867. So in 53, we didn't actually have any civil servants in Ohio. Everybody had equal standing. We had the Bar Association, and this again is what we're talking here, is they put in a private bill. It only applied to their class of people. What they did was on House Joint Resolution 121, they took it into the District of Columbia to create their state of Ohio. This is what this 15 pages of the document is. Dwight D. Eisenhower signed it. It was signed by the Congress, and that would all fine and dandy if they had left their state of Ohio in the District of Columbia. But what they had done from 1867 up to 1953, they had filled our public offices with their people. Nobody has an oath of officer bond, the judges, the prosecutors. So whenever they passed this in 53, they just moved their private bill into their people to enforce it. So we went from our government and our with us as the beneficiary into now a state of Ohio was the beneficiary. We found out by getting it. Yeah, let's wait.
Yeah, and Dwight, I just want to point out to people, because I think this is such an important thing for people to understand. Look at the level of research that went into this information. Look at the black ink on white paper as we get in there and ferret out this information to the degree so that we're able to understand it. And I just want everybody to acknowledge the depth of research that us, shall we call ourselves paper terrorists, this is what we're talking about. We know the facts, and we can't be dissuaded from it because of the depth of the information. So carry on, Dwight. It's so important
that
people understand.
I want to interject here real quick, and something really important. Dwight said the magic year 1866. Who remembers the teachings of the Erie Canal? During that time, the Erie Canal was a series of 36 locks, and there were many private bills that were passed to make sure that that could happen so that the state of Ohio could exist as a massive commerce import and export to all the other Great Lakes. That is the key of why Ohio had to not be a state right away.
Yeah, good point. Okay, Dwight, carry on.
What we got into the show on the commercial side of this was on the Highway Safety Act of 1966, Congress allotted federal funding to a government. A W-9 is a government entity, or a state is a government entity on a W-9. And they allotted it at a percentage rate of 60% to the state and 40% to a political subdivision. So knowing that they have to allow the money in to get it, they allow us to have free election. They allow us to hold public office. But what they're doing here is whenever they issued a driver's license to you, Rod got into this probably already. There are two forms of driver's license. One is a commercial over 10,000 pound. But what we found out here is that the states are all issuing one, but it's an under 10,000 pound, and it's a franchise non-government license. Now, I think this non-government license is the key to how they're getting back in stealing money. Once you already agreed to the concept that you don't have a government here, you have no rights, you have no constitution, so whenever you appear in court now, and their franchise is the plaintiff now, instead of my political subdivision that should be getting 40%, they're transferring whatever funds I should have got over to their private franchise. We have documentation. I don't have it here, but there was a document about 3 hours long, Alex Jones and Walter Burris, that got into the CAFRA account. One of the accounts they looked at was in Austin, Texas, because that's where Alex Jones is out of. Now, Alex Jones and Walter Burris, they checked the Doing Business As, CAFR account in Austin. The actual government account is in Houston. There's only one comptroller currency in the United States, government, is in Houston. Whenever they did an audit or Freedom of Information Act on the Austin account, they opened up the books and they had $456 billion in Austin. And that was all money that it wasn't only the state of Ohio issuing a license. The state of Texas issued their own franchise license. So whenever you go into court, you're an enemy of the state. You have no rights, and they'll tell you that. We got into the signature side of this thing under 31 CFR 363.33. So whenever you sign your signature, you're an enemy of the state. You are a ward of the court. Now that attorney that represents you or is assigned to you takes your signature down to their comptroller, gets into your account, puts the money back into their account, and that's where that $456 billion has come from.
Now, and you're saying that is just in one county in Texas? The $456 billion is in one county in Texas, or is that the state of Texas?
Well, that is in, I don't know if it's in one property or if it's in Austin, but they only checked the one account, and that was in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Now, there is other accounts out here.
Yes, in each area, in each state.
Okay, let's get back to Ohio for a minute now. We already established that Ohio is not a state, not a government state. Ohio was turned over to the Bar Association into a corporate entity in 1953, and we have 88 counties. Now, how much money do you think is floating around up there in CAFRA accounts?
Yep. And so this is a big part of what we're doing as far as the educational aspects of what we're doing. We're really tying it down so that people who have had questions about, oh, come on, you're just talking about all these birth certificate things. You don't know what you're talking about. And you're talking about all this. You're supposed to have an account that people are accessing, and the truth of it is we're proving that there is such an account set up and that these people have accessed it every which way but loose, and that the only people who aren't benefiting are the very people who have been the credit line for this government all the time. Would you say that was an accurate assessment of what we're dealing with, Dwight?
Yeah.
Well, I got into about probably 6 years ago. Whenever we was up doing the Oklahoma case, just out of curiosity, I got into Dun & Bradstreet. I looked at that court case, and I started going through the names on the docket, the judge, the court itself, the prosecutor, the notary. Everybody on that was also traded as state of Oklahoma. We were the only entities on that whole piece of paper that wasn't traded as. Now, I got into Ohio at the same time. The governor up there was also traded as Department of Motor Vehicle. So you know he's getting a piece of the pie for all the tickets written.
Yeah, of course. And then it just, you know, you get down the rabbit hole, and it's really quite something, isn't it?
Well, what we're looking at, with all the stuff going on the rod, that we've got in it, there's nobody has filed for entry in that court case. There's no injured party. They're failing to respond. He's got about 70 documents now, and if you want to go by count, without even including the information on the inside, we have 70 separate qualifications against the Bar Association, against their bar. We can have them disqualified for constitutional violations, just on 70 pieces of paper.
Right.
We have the State Justice Institute. There's also a charter corporation, Chapter 42, U.S. 42 U.S.C. Chapter 413. They were created by Congress, and their job was actually to help the court system, to streamline it, give them money to help with the flow, get the people in and out. But what they're actually doing here is they're funding a grant for the Conference for Chief Justice and Court Administrators. And that is a 2.5-hour video to where Chief Justice Thomas J. Moyer, and he's not even the Chief Justice. If you go back in, you understand what happened in Ohio. He's not even a judge. He has no oath of office in a bond. He's just a CEO. Chaired this organization to where they outlined a policy for profiling us in the courtroom. If you bring in the Bill of Rights, if you bring in the Constitution, if you bring in the Christian right, if you appear as a pro se litigant, they will dismiss your case, find you guilty, and we've booked the line for a remedy for an appeal. The Supreme Court will turn it down, and I can validate that because I have a habeas corpus that was turned into Thomas J. Moyer, after I spent a year in the county jail, and he denied my habeas corpus.
Well, see, the thing of it is, when we was doing our court case up there in Ohio, on mine, when we brought charges against all these people up there, the Attorney General for the state of Ohio sent us back, says, we don't work for them. We can't represent these people. These people had to go out and get their own private law firm out of Cincinnati to sit down and handle a case that we brought against them in the Supreme Court. And I've never seen a 12F, but they nailed me with a 12F on these people. And that 12S means, because we filed a notice of felony, and that 12S means, this is scandalous. How dare you bring charges against us? This is unheard of. A 12F, this is just so scandalous. Well, you're damn right it's scandalous because you're bringing charges against us. Because, again, we went and we proved nobody had an oath. Nobody had a bond. Nobody had a job on any of this. And this is what happened up here in D.C. is they were stupid, and they wanted to bring in my stuff out of Ohio. Well, the moment they did, this opened up the 14th Amendment. Is that the prosecutor that I had in Ohio was a fourth-degree felon. He was disbarred for life. Dwight and I pulled the paperwork out of the Supreme Court in Ohio on him. He had about 3 or 4 files, about 3 inches thick. I went down to the county court where he was charged. I pulled all the documentation from them. We put it in. It said nobody had an oath. This man's a fourth-degree felon. And we started going through the federal courts, and we started going through the Supreme Court, and these people had to hire outside law firms because they don't work for the state. They're not state employees. They're at will.
And so what we can say, Rod, is as a result of what you started uncovering in Ohio, this is exactly why you have taken on this role to become one of the most educated men in the law that I have ever met in my life. You quote statutes and codes, you quote the Constitution, you quote the American jurisprudence, because you do it on such a regular basis, and the reason that you take this private attorney general and bounty hunter position so strongly is because of the sheer fraud that you have uncovered in the courtrooms as you've had to deal with the judges and the lawyers. And so this is exactly what we're dealing with as we begin to call for the International Tribunal to start holding these judges accountable to the rule of law. Because right now in the courtrooms across America, what we're finding is that they are not being held accountable to the rule of law. And so a big part of our job is to make people aware of what's really going on, you know, without shining a light, without that awareness of what's going on, then we don't know that there's a problem and we don't know what to do about it. And I'd like to bring you in here, Harvey, and get your take on what you've been seeing, because you've been working with Rod over, I think, since about 2006 now. So I'd like to get your overview of what you're seeing as we're all going through this process of basically helping others to see what's going on behind the scenes and in the courtrooms. Can we get...
I've been watching Rod or listening to Rod for 2007. Is my mic on? Yeah, it is. Okay. And a lot of people that listen to the calls, unfortunately, are looking for instant remedy. It has taken us, or it's taken Rod, from 2001 up until 2014. Is my phone up? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. We can hear you fine, Harvey.
Oh, okay. So Rod has been at this since 2001 when he's originally pulled over in Ohio. And so all of this information that's being exposed is all because of the original traffic charge back in 2001 for Rod. And he had to get up to speed for that case. And now it's just been going and going and going. But it's been going from 2001 to 2014. That's how long it takes to ferret out all of this information. I mean, when we started out, I gave this image to Rod one time. I said, you know, when we first started out trying to get all the information about all this, we were assembling it on a card table, and then the card table became a pool table, and then the pool table became the dining room table, and then the dining room table became a trampoline outside. We had to put all this information on because there was so much coming in. Now the card table is the size of a football field and perhaps even, you know, bigger than that. It's taken a long time to get to the knowledge level, to get to the intricacy level of what the heck's going on. And Rod himself has studied all of this. But even information comes in from our listeners and from others that Rod didn't know about, which he's able to incorporate into this whole puzzle that we're trying to decipher, trying to put together and parse and all of that. But it isn't an instant kind of thing because it does take a long time. Rod will tell you. I mean, there are no instant remedies available. As we uncover something, we uncover something else. As something comes to light, something else comes to light, which then goes off in your head and you say to yourself, oh, I remember hearing about this 5 years ago, but I didn't know how it applied. And you know, so this is how it is. It's a really ongoing process. Remember, it took them from 1789 till 2014 to build their paradigm. We're not going to deconstruct it in 5 or 6 or 10 years. It's going to take a while, and it is taking a while. But with all the stuff that Rod, all the cases that Rod has been involved in, all of the issues that have been brought up, we get closer and closer. And eventually, a process will emerge that will work. The call Wednesday night, if any of you are familiar with the call Wednesday night, that was on the common law grand juries. That thing started, it's been bubbling under for 4 or 5 years, but it really officially started with this group, the New Liberty Alliance, about a year, year and a half ago. And it seemed like it was going slow, and then it started to pick up steam. They now have 3,142 counties in the United States on board and able to start to do their process at their local level on this grand jury conundrum. So, I mean, these things don't happen overnight. And so you just have to understand that as far as looking for instant remedy. I mean, yes. Rob will be the first to agree on that.
And one of the things that we're doing as we're putting these kinds of shows together is that we're bringing a lot of people into the mix who would not have been familiar with the type of research that we've been uncovering. And I say we because I've been a part of the AIB radio network for quite several years now. Those of us who are drawn to this, we take this study very, very serious. We don't miss it, and we read all the court cases. I mean, it's really quite interesting to me because, like Christina and Jenny, who were talking earlier on the show, this would have not been something that I would have thought that I would have been real, you know, drawn to. But as I got caught up helping my brother in his case, and then just we got so into the understanding of what was going on that we've all taken it to that degree, and now we're forming alliances, the grand juries and the, you know, the OPPTers and the Rod Class groups and the Angela Starks and just so many across the way, the anti-foreclosure networks. We're all joining together and taking the understanding to a greater degree. So I think that's a large part of what's going on here. Harvey, look how many places, I mean, we're simulcasting on about four different networks as we're talking right now.
I know.
So that part's fascinating to me.
With that, I'd like to introduce Lamont Cassell. He's going to be coming through the little BBS image over there. Lamont, are you there?
Yeah, hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you, and we've gotten through the little technical itch, but you are here. And we want to introduce Lamont, was the incredible mutual cameraman that was down there with us to try to record the events. And he is doing some incredible work to help us put together multiple pieces of documentary. Lamont, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I'm just coming in on the tail end of this, or in the middle. I tried to put myself through the Skype, but because of technical glitches, you have to have me through the old-fashioned way, through a phone and a Bluetooth speaker.
And you sound wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, hey. All right, Rebecca, let me just get back to some of the Rod stuff, if you don't mind, just for a moment or two.
Sure.
Part of the Rod DC case that is really exciting, even though the judge is denying many, many of his filings are being published by us on the internet. There's a repository where we have that. And I can't give you the actual name of it right now because it escapes me, but it's Dropbox something or other. But anyway, if there are people that are listening to this that are not are just hearing about Rod, we have what is called the Big List, which is about 2,000 people that get the announcements for when the calls are, which normally are Tuesdays and Fridays, or maybe only a Tuesday, or maybe only a Friday of any particular week. But anyway, in the Big List are published some are published links within Dropbox of some of these filings that Rod is doing. The same filings that the courts are not accepting or are denying. So we have a place to do that. Now, the Big List, in order, if you're new to this, all you do is you send an email to Rod, Rod-class, C-L-A-S-S, dash subscribe, S-U-B-S-C-R-I-B-E, at Ray Servers, and that's like a guy's name, R-A-Y, Ray Servers, like a computer server. So Ray Servers, RayServerS.com. And you'll be on the Big List. And when you're on the Big List, the next Big List, once you join, the next Big List that comes out, you'll get. You don't get past ones, sorry. But you should save them all because there's a limited space in the Big List. But the big thing about Rod's DC case is, even though the judge is denying many of these filings, The filings are available to the public on the drive.
Now we're getting hammered. But it was like Dwight was sitting here saying, if we can get the International Tribunal up, and this, Dwight brought this up the other night on a private call that we had here. If we can get the International Tribunal up and we can get a hearing and let us bring in a court case where we could get off the hook on my case with what we're doing, but bring in the State Justice Institute, bring in the Federal Bar Association, well, we can expose the CAFR account. Well, that CAFR account, like I said, that $465 billion in Austin, Texas, that's just one city. There is $48 million in a county upper in Ohio just outside of Columbus. That's a county, $48 million. We got 3,332 counties. How much, who knows how much is sitting in their CAFR account and how much is sitting in the state capital and sitting in some of these other cities that they are embezzling this kind of money. We could turn around and we could pay off the national debt, and this could be funded that could go into the international court to help get it set up. It could help educate, get the PAG boot camp set up, get the county, you know, common law stuff set up for each of the counties for the common law. It could give us the finances if we could go back in and get the international court to come in, start holding trials, and we could start having access to this money that is sitting in these counties. And these judges, they're not going to have any place to run. They're not going to have any place to hide. And they're going to be pleading and begging to come back to the Republic side of this thing and out of the international side. Because right now, it's like I told the people here, I've had several comments. Well, Rod, we don't want international help. He said, yes, we do. We need international help. And that is because of the International Organization Immunities Act of 1945. When Congress created this, they placed all these public offices under UN jurisdiction. And the proof of that is when Hillary Clinton brought charges against Arizona governor and legislation and against the sheriff department, took him straight to the UN and brought him in under the international organization to have them charged for international crime for interfering with immigration. There's the proof that these people come under international law. This is why we need the International Tribunal. This is why we're pushing for the PAG side, why I'm pushing for international recognition on this. So if we can get the international recognition as the private attorney general and as a bounty hunter on this, and I'm sitting on 8 letters of marquee and reprisal that was given to me by our own Congress to take these people out of office any way we deem fit. We're sitting on the ability, if we had the enforcement, to come in, take these people out administratively, get them tried administratively, bring them up before a grand jury for international crimes of humanitarian reason and war crimes, and let them go before an international tribunal like Nuremberg and let them be charged. And if they're innocent, then they walk. If they are found guilty, then they pay the penalty. This is what we're trying for on the international level. That's why we're pushing this. This is what this D.C. case has turned into because of the type of paperwork that we've been turning out and what we have been bringing up. This just isn't about a Second Amendment right. It isn't about the right to carry because I had a carry concealed permit. They opened up the door on this thing when they hit Ohio, and we started bringing up that Ohio didn't have a 14th Amendment, and seeing how Ohio didn't have one, neither does D.C., because these people relinquished their public office, and they came under U.N. jurisdiction. So all this came out of this D.C. case of what we've been fighting up here. Again, it was on a stupid traffic issue, because I parked in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they escalated this stupid thing. And because they escalated, I escalated it back. This is what we're working on. This is how this thing got in depth for the international side. It was stupid on their side of the fence. They should have walked off from this thing. It's like Ohio.
Yeah, they should have dismissed this case a year ago, but for whatever reason, they decided just to keep it going. And that's been where so much of the education has come together, because those of us who have been following this case, we have gotten to the place where we have exposed more and more and more and more of the fraud. And, I mean, for me, just watching how those the Attorney General used the definition of a firearm without going into the statutes and codes and using, I mean, we caught them in it. At every turn, we caught them in such chicanery that it was just, it was blatant in your face this time, and we were able to see it right as it was unfolding. It's almost like these people are being caught, you know, with their hands in the cookie jar and with their, you know, with their pants down, so to speak, in such a way that, we're all just watching it in real time unfold. Yeah. And it got to be quite interesting this time.
Yeah, pants down and hand in the cookie jar. I got them both ways.
Yeah, right, so.
We got them in the administrative side and on the constitutional side. I want to take a time to introduce Lamont Cassell here. He's coming in through the BBS radio side. We have gone through our technical gremlins. Lamont, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm enjoying the conversation. Thank you, and thank you for your appreciation. Thank you for your comments about the sizzler reel that's going to promote Rod Class and hopefully put a huge launching pad on and a huge magnifying glass on what's going on a domestic level and bridging that important gap of international community, international support for this cause.
Yeah.
And you're
one of the things. Yeah.
You're a film producer, a camera operator, an intrepid personality, and a really smart person. From your perspective at this event, what did we walk through? I mean, you've heard the conversations here, and you've heard a lot of the stuff. I mean, you're very, very familiar with the law and your own perspective and your own training. So we would like to hear you how we put together this event, and knowing we're going to be training 1,000 PAGs, and we'd like you to talk about what it takes to put on a production like that, because we're trying to get the people out there to understand. To put this information out, there has to be a production, more than just the radio shows that are each week.
I totally agree. I think we are the core catalyst for such a endeavor. And to be honest, it's fun, and it's going to be a very explorative and a huge learning curve that we can all adjust to and get a hold of and move forward. The huge email service and huge email list from different sectors, from New Earth Nation, from the Galactic Historian, and from their special interest groups inside of that, as well as Rod Class, the One People's Public Trust. We can all just galvanize, just the way the other side of the fence has galvanized for years and centuries, and hold ourselves accountable to giving crisp, clear, third grade or 12th grade educational language to those who want to be part of this new endeavor, and those, especially those who want to be part of the administrative side of a PAG, and getting that explored. Now, as far as conferences are concerned, well, we have already the webinar process of getting piping this information into the webinar side of things, but there's always that brick and mortar aspect, and the brick and mortar aspect is what I call the blue chip start of marketing, which is that you can, you know, have a conference hall in any state you like to have a conference hall, and just promote as much as you can in advance with email blast of certain language, of a call to action. I know Rebecca and myself come from the communication and marketing and from that broadcasting background, we can put something together where we can have an email blast promoting in advance a Rod Class and the PAG side of this, and also get that all interested parties involved on an administrative level and also on the IM document. So we have it all integrated into one concise syllabus, a call to action to promote the event, a controlled environment so we can film it and we can have a quality sound and we can, just coach each other how to be on that tip-top shape when it comes to these webinars and these conferences that we can hold in conference halls or arenas or in hotel training session rooms. And, and we can just give that information out to the public in advance so we can have a huge draw. And then from those who come, those who are clearly interested in the subject can, be a PAG or a PAG student and pursue it from there.
Also professional witnesses, one Christina was mentioning earlier in the show. And that's something else we're going to add to the repertoire of all of the great ideas that came out of the campground event. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring Lamont on is very specific. It's so that the people that the regular audience here, that ones that are in AIB and the Galactic Historian side and on the New Earth Nation and on BBS side, we are promoting this thing at the highest level. We have some amazing footage that's come out of the out of the footage from there, and we are putting together micro documentaries, macro documentaries. We're going to put together the story so you can digest it at the third grade, fifth grade, eighth grade, 12th grade, college level, whatever he needs to digest it at. And when presenting Lamont, he is going to be a key in helping people see from the creative standpoint of how to put together these documents, these videos. And what we like people to do is to encourage is to email either Rebecca or the Galactic Historian or anyone here and say, we want to hear, if you know any of us, Rod or Harvey or Don at BBS Radio, and you want to hear an actual training seminar and training PAGs, we want to hear from you. We want your emails. Getting our contact information isn't hard. This helps us gauge at what level we can begin to plan productions. And we want to give this information out, but unfortunately, we are at a point where we cannot just give it out for free. Rod has a tremendous amount of paper bills coming his way, as well as, living off of his disability. They're not intending to make it easy here. And we must understand, Rod has a bracelet around his ankle. That is in your face. In your face. And we intend to do something called Interview with an Anklet. And it from a perspective of the system where it's going to be talking back to Rod, and Rod's going to get an interview, and we're going to get the perfect voice, and we're not going to make fun of the system, but we're going to show, or the system in this little animation scenario where the Brinklet gets to talk back, what they're doing, and by keeping him out of DC, why they are so scared of him. And I know there are independent film people out there, and we want you to begin to look at this material. Lamont is a special person. He understands the law. Before he became a camera operator, a professional in production, it was his passion. And that is what need, that passion and creativity. Rebecca, before she got into this, had the passion and creativity to follow through. Harvey, Rod, myself, Santi, Don, all of us had the passion to follow through and to bring it to this level. And when we're going to be presenting products to you, and there are many, many people out there that insist that absolutely everything be free. But unfortunately, even this radio show, all of these events that we did, we had volunteers helping us. We did the best that we could do with the budgets that we had. And so we're going to be releasing the Master Codex product that helps people understand what the War Powers Act is, what a private attorney general is, and that product is going to be able to fund shows like How to Train 1,000 Permanent Attorney Generals, how to have these events, or have them sponsor them at your home. Rebecca's going to be putting GoFundMe campaigns for Operation Spitwad and the filing of paperwork and all of the other projects that we have going. But we need your support out there. And right now we're asking for your email support, Rod, Harvey, Don, myself, whoever, send it and say, we want to see 1,000 PAGs, or we want a webinar 2 days before Rod's first pretrial. So not only are we keeping the fans to the feet to the fire, media and publicly, on what's going on with Rod's trial, we'll be able to have something ahead of time ready to respond when the system decides to either let Rod go or extend his trial or do whatever it is that they're going to do. But come the 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st of August, he's only a few days away from either having that anklet off or that anklet on, or worse. And we are going to do our best to promote every live radio a show to simulcast like this, but we need you to email us and say you want to hear those webinars. We need you to email your friends and say, listen to these radio shows. Go to AIB, go to BBS, go back. We have 20-plus hours in Law and Sovereignty between Rod, myself, and Rebecca. And if you go back into the New Earth Nation, you'll see shows all the way back until March on Sovereignty. We have been beating this drum for a time, and now we come to the point where we have a constitutional bounty hunter with 8 letters of marquee of reprisal and an international judge that's going to be validating his paperwork. All the while, that constitutional bounty hunter has a anklet around him that prevents him from what? Leaving the state. That is state police right there at the corporate level, and we are going to video every point of it.
I would have to say that's the most important thing. Also, an unfortunate thing, you know. They are doing a disservice to Rod and his marquee and his reprisal and his seal that he got from the floor of Congress. They're doing a disservice to those people who have been railroaded from their foreclosures. They're doing a disservice for those who have been going through child collective services and getting their children taken away. It's become a critical mass now where the best and the right solution to this strategy is to combine the email databases together and get a key copy promotional call to action from a marketing standpoint to drive enough viewers, drive enough audience from any region of the United States, north, south, east, west, to these different brick-and-mortar conference halls where we can actually have face-to-face contact and where Rod is at his best to give the information out. I've actually experienced, if not an epiphany, but a breathtaking experience traveling from New York where, you know, you have your own preconceived notions of what the South is, and all those being shattered, all those preconceived notions are shattered. I have relatives there, and I have relatives in the South that I know they're doing their thing and doing well. Some are not doing so well, and they need to hear this information. They need to hear it from all different regions, all different ethnic groups in this great land of America. And when I was down there, it was quite an experience. People came from different walks of life. Some had well good intentions and have been like totally seasoned in this type of pursuit and been well trained and well preserved. 20 years into the game, on the level of Rod and Carl, but doing their own mission, doing their own persevering. And when we met Paul, where I recruited him and convinced him to be the host for this this 8-minute or 7-minute trailer that I composed, and he's so impressive with his divine province campaign and his divine province leadership and moving from one area to another and talking to the people. He just mentioned I had a phone call conversation with Paul, who is the host of this promotional trailer that we shared internally. It was an amazing conversation. He's actually 100 miles north of Denver, North Carolina, at a old style. What they call it? The old style.
Bluegrass Festival.
Old style bluegrass event where 4,000 to 3,000 people are attending, and he's telling me that they're interested in Rod Class, they're interested in the Constitution. They know something is wrong. They feel it in their bones. They're very conscious of what the judicial system is doing to them and railroading them through land tax, property tax, wage taxes, and child support, child collection, child services, foreclosures, and traffic violations. And how can you live a life that way? And you know, his story is very, very telling because We had an idea of just going around the two of us and just filming people's testimonials, just filming it, just archiving it, because make it a historical event, and then blast it somewhere in some channel, some media channel. It doesn't have to be in TV. doesn't have to win a Cannes Film Festival award. It can just be a very humble way of sharing the message.
Exactly, and this is the vision I saw when I brought Lamont into this call. This is that the people out there understand that we're presenting the law and sovereignty, but at the same time, for this to work for everyone, we have got to all be working on the same media train. It's important. We're trying to bring this information out there at a value to you. So the people that do demand absolutely everything free, unfortunately, we cannot give out absolutely everything free. Rod would be in jail. Simple as that. This whole movement would fall apart.
Well, the court system should definitely be ashamed of themselves. Kessler, the chief judge, now the chief judge of 333 Constitution Avenue, he should definitely be ashamed of himself, consciously knowing that he's violated his own jurisprudence 63D 2D of knowing and willingly knowing that this man is a constitutional a private attorney general, bounty hunter, and being put through this duress, stress, and inconvenience and hardship of going driving from North Carolina to attend that 10-mile square area in D.C. to attend these court appearances, which are really, a federal kangaroo court.
And I think their arrogance will be their undoing in the long run, Lamont. They think that we, the people, do not have what it takes to be able to stand against them. And it is going to take us. It's going to take every skill that we all possess. But because we have such passion and purpose behind what we're doing, every single person is coming together. And there's not just one of us. There are just many, 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 many of us who are gathering together to do this. And I think that their own arrogance is going to be their undoing in the end.
So Rebecca, you want to let the audience in on what's going on with Rising Life Media and some of the meetings that we got going? And one of the reasons I brought Lamana is to show people that we are going to take this at the highest level of our broadcast.
Yes. And we just had an amazing meeting with Rogier with Rising Life Media and Amit Tita, who is with National Geographic. These are the people that were in on the first gathering of the documentary evidence with Rod in June. And then when we went back, we were just doing the conference. Andrew and Santi had come, and they were going to put together the conference for the people who were there in attendance. And we ended up with so much more. We had the agent walk into our midst. We had so many really good interviews that we shared all of that with Rogier and Amit and got the video to them. They're talking, well, actually all of us together. We're talking about putting together a major GOM TV show that will showcase the PAG work that Rod and the other groups are doing. So we're in a massive undertaking here that is just organically unfolding as all of us are coming together and working on this. This material is so important. I cannot stress how important what we have put together, all of the interviews, the people who attended the conference, the number of interviews of really educated people who are a part of this movement, and Lamont, you left out the fact that we all got to share this beautiful house sort of in a house party-like activity for almost 8 days.
Yeah, we sure did.
That was just fun of it, yeah.
That was breathtaking. That was breathtaking. That was actually a work of art that Jenny Pippin put together. That was sure. I was quite breathtaking with that endeavor 18 months.
Well, and it was just, it was just sheer fun, and as a result of all of us coming together.
Yeah, that's true.
As a result of all of us coming together, the ideas just flowed. You know, this is where Operation Spitwad came out of. Andrew, I think that was your...
Yep.
I think you were the one who nailed that one, and every single one of us were on that, like, as my friend says, like white on rice. Because that just hit us right where we needed it. And so that's going to become sort of, you know, if they're going to call us paper terrorists, for Pete's sakes, we've got the perfect antidote. Let's shoot the spit wads at them and show them what a paper terrorist really can do. And we do have some really serious things that we're going to do, as a result of Operation Spitwad. But what I'm saying is the amount of ideas that flowed as we were all together and working with our passions and, you know, gosh, we put an awful lot of effort into everything that we pulled together, but a lot of good came out of it.
In an attempt to get our audience to turn over, Operation Spitwad was put into effect, as was Operation Paper Tiger Roar. And Paper Tiger Roar, what this is to get people to get an envelope and a piece of paper and to type on letterhead that you're sending to your clerk or courts, ROAR, R-O-A-R, in quotes. And we want 1 million people to send a letter to their local clerk or courts that says ROAR. It's nothing to do with the law. It simply says your paper tiger is making a sound in your system.
Yep.
And we're doing things like this because there are people that cannot even write one word on a piece of paper. They are so afraid to send something to their court. And we're going to take it away one step at a time.
We got Rod, and we got the whole engine behind it with the PAGs. They can weigh in on that rebutting the paper terrorist coin phrase. I mean, these guys are really paper patriots, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Paper patriots. I like that.
Paper patriots. And as people really begin to understand the level of knowledge that is coming from all of these groups, then that has got to shift the perception. And so that's a large part of what we're doing as we bring so many of these diverse groups together, is just emphasizing that. And you know, we're absolutely going to be needing your support as we put these GoFundMe campaigns together. And as we put this, we love your input. I mean, I'm getting emails every day with Operation Spitwad in the subject line to tell me to, you know, put on the mailing list so they can have all the information as we get it together. And also, volunteers are needed to help do the websites and to do just the pure old marketing campaign. I would love to have a first-class marketer join and help take the responsibility for putting all of this together.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you have some time, you know, we all donate. I never put less than 50 hours a week as a volunteer into what I'm doing. I never put less than that. And I'll bet Andrew puts more than that, and I know Rod Class does. So, you know, we all do this to help educate you. So we just invite your participation every which way.
Is Rod still on the phone?
Yeah.
Rod's here. He's just muted.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'm still here. We're just sitting back listening. The thing of it is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're not doing this for us. Because if I was just doing this for me, I wouldn't have been doing the show for as long as I have. And I wouldn't be sharing the documentation. And that's what Harvey was sitting here saying. Everything that I do, everything that him and I work on, and we get the thing critiqued out, it hits the big list. It hits the Dropbox. So you all can sit down and see what we're filing, how we're filing, who we're filing it into, what claims we're bringing against them. So you will have a foundation of how to stand up against these people. This is the biggest thing that we're trying to show here. Because if it was about me, I sure wouldn't be on here now, and we would not be having the talk show that I have, and we wouldn't be sharing this information. But this isn't about patriot for profit on our side of the fence. But like they're sitting here saying, donations need to come in, because the amount of expense that it costs to send out paperwork that we're doing here. Because when I sent out paperwork this last time, I not only sent it to the court, to the prosecutor, I sent it to the provost marshal, I've sent it to the house of the sergeant of arms, the Senate sergeant of arms. There is a list of people that we're sending this stuff out certified mail to that has to be paid for. And that doesn't include the ink and the paper and the electricity to run all this stuff, in the mail and the gas to run down and deliver all this stuff. ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot here, but it is being given and handed out, and that's why we got Harvey to put this thing up on the big list, put it on Dropbox, so you all can sit here and see what we're following, how we're following, and how we're coming after these people, because this is what's going to help you with your cases. Because, like I said, I don't come in and defend myself. I do not know how to come in and justify them railroading me. I do know how to come in and tell them how to do their job and what they're doing wrong, and just go on that basis of it. Like I said, this DC case really opened up a big, big can on the international level that I never thought it would ever go this far. But because of what we're doing in D.C., because of what we are exposing, it's like Rebecca sitting here said, there is major international ties into this thing. And National Geographic's of all things, National Geographic's is tied into this, and they're talking about doing documentaries on this, and they're talking about doing series on this. They're talking about overseas of doing, you know, TV programs on this and setting this thing up. This has opened up a big, big, big thing, more than we ever thought about ever come out of D.C. on this.
It's almost like they gave it to us.
Yes.
Because they knew you were the only one administratively wise that could do it and give them an out in which they could admit their fraud and hopefully, under the Whistleblower Act, not be prosecuted under war crimes or, be worse, prosecuted as treasonous, seditionist personalities.
But it fits our personality.
You know, on another side here, we've got so much going with this gun case. They've handed just less so much media. You know, and either way, come the second when you're pretrial or the eighth when your court trials, we're going to have three more shows before then. And we are going to do our damnedest to put together the last webinar before any of those court cases try. So we want you all to reach out and email Dwight, Rod, Lamont, myself, Doug at the PBS, that you guys want to hear that. We need to hear you roar. You are not paper tigers. You're not paper terrorists.
And don't forget, yeah, that's Rebecca.
Yes. So why don't we all give out email addresses so that the audience can respond to us? Rod, why don't you go ahead and give your email address out or how to get a hold of you?
It's called ITS, It's Constitutional. That's ITSCONSTITUTIONAL @gmail.com.
Rebecca?
Okay, and I am Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, @humanitad.org. That's humanitad.org. That is the New Earth Nation email list that will get right to me and put either Operation Spitwad or Volunteer or whatever in the subject line, so I'll be sure not to miss it from that standpoint. Thank you.
Harvey?
Oh, okay. Let's see. My email address is mentor2@gmail.com. Please don't send me any emails that say important, must see, blah, blah, blah. Make your subject line specific. As you know, we all don't have very much time.
We want you to say roar in the web, but we want to hear the webinar. Yeah. We want to hear the audience say that to us. We want to look in and see 10,000 people say, do a webinar.
Right.
Lamont, you go ahead and give your email address.
Oh, yeah, sure. You can put a subject line in my email, Roar, I like that, or you can put PAG of interest, or you can put in the subject line Paper Patriot, so that way I know, identify it, and it's simple enough, is zenla@yahoo.com, and Zenla spelled X as in Xavier, E as in Eric, N as in Nancy, L as in Larry, A as in Apple, zenla@yahoo.com.
And if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can go to galactichistorian.com and fill out the contact button. And we want to hear you roar. We really do. Operation Paper Tiger Roar is now in the effect, where you can write one letter with one stamp to your local Corker Courts that says Roar in quotes. And I'm asking, is there a million people out there with a bob, balls, ovary, or backbone, to write Roar on a piece of paper and send it to your Clerk of Courts?
Well, I'll tell you what happened here up in Ohio several years ago is that a city cop decided to pull over a motorcycle group that was doing a poker run. They pulled in over 500 bikers. 500 bikers showed up at court in front of Elam, Upper and Maslin. 500 bikers got their charges dismissed, and a cop got his butt reamed. How dare you bring in this many bikers? Because the bikers not only filled up the courtroom, they filled up the hallway, and it was out around the building. And ladies and gentlemen, we need to pack this courtroom in D.C. in such a fashion that it is not only just in the courtroom, it is all in the hallway and around the building to let them know this is support on what we're doing, to send them a message that what they're doing is wrong, that they should be dismissing this case. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there is no victim on their side of the fence. There was no harm, no foul. I had a carry concealed permit. Everything was locked up where it was supposed to have been locked up. The Second Amendment gave us a right. They had Supreme Court rulings from the Heller case, the Parker case, the Palmer case that came in and ruled that their laws were unconstitutional, and they disregarded. Basically, what it boiled down to was a contempt of court on their side of the fence. They came in contempt of their own decisions. Not us, them.
They disqualified themselves.
So this comes right back into a felony and into a issue on their side of treasonous sedition, insurrection, overthrow of their own system. Ladies and gentlemen, this needs to stop. And this is what the PAG is about. It's about coming in and doing accountability on these people. It's about being able to come in and jerk them off the bench, bring them before a tribunal, get them tried, get them charged, get them removed. If they don't want to do their job right, then leave. Don't sit here and see how much money you can make on the sideline, because this is what we brought up on the Chris account, which is the court registry investment system. We sent this off to the federal agents showing how they are securitizing on every one of these court cases and monetizing these court cases. It is highly profitable for them to turn around and to find you guilty, because there's money to be made off this stuff.
Your signature.
Yeah, your signature on this whole thing is what it's all about. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what the PAG is about doing accountability on their side of the fence. We need your support. I have pushed this probably farther than most people. You've got a lot of good people out here. You know, Paul Mitchell, he's on diesel therapy. You've got Rolf Winterroth. He's excellent on this stuff, on what he's doing. But I haven't really seen a whole lot of people pushing this in the areas that I'm pushing it in and going after this, or sitting on quite the credentials that we're sitting on that I went down and applied for through their own statutes, their own codes, their own constitution, and applied for the documentation that we're sitting on for the ability of us to do it. We just need the enforcement, and that enforcement comes from us. It comes from the people. It's up to us to go back and do it. But if we can get the international tribunal up, this is the perfect thing, because now we would have a court to do the hearing and try these people on the court side of this thing. This is what we're lacking, is the enforcement, and we're trying it. We got the position, we got the documentation, we just need the enforcement.
Well, we know we need enforcement, and that's what the coming together at the campground was about. We are at the end of the show here. Everyone has given out their contact information. I want to thank Lamont for coming on here, Harvey, Rebecca, Christina, Jenny, Don, and Santi in the background, and everyone that's been listening, thank you very much. Everyone at AIB, everyone at BBS. This has been another Adventures into Sovereignty on TalkShoe, simulcast on BBS, the Mega Giant, and simulcast on Google+. And yes, we are a mega multimedia interdependent sovereign group of beings who are coming together to share something incredible. So look to your inboxes. Everyone, we expect to see lots of roars. Thanks, everyone. We'll have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. Good show, guys. And let's hear from everybody. Thank you, Andrew, always.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good night.